Let's sit down once again with Matt Stringer, RNIB's chief executive, and discuss some of the big stories coming from the UK charity. Matt, thank you very much for joining us.
Good to be here.
Let's dive in then and look at our three topics for today. Of course, we've just recently celebrated the 75th anniversary of the founding of the National Health Service. It plays a big part in what RNIB does. I know you want to talk a little bit about our vital ECHLO service.
Yes, that's right. I mean, 75th anniversary of the health service, fairly celebrated across the country in a variety of ways. But for us, our relationship with the NHS is critical. You know, eye health is an enormous issue. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people every year going through a sort of eye health experience. It can be a little bit disjointed and fragmented. So I'm very pleased that in about 75% of the NHS trusts, 75% of sort of national coverage across the UK, we have an eye clinic liaison officer, an ECHLO. First started in 1994 in Rotherham. And the ECHLOs play a vital role providing support for people who've gone through a clinical experience, but come out of that having had, you know, what could be a particularly difficult diagnosis and suddenly feeling pretty abandoned about what they do next, whether that's around employment, around welfare, around housing, around finding information, you know, finding that in an accessible format. And the ECHLOs provide that rounded sort of support, that safety net, which is critical to that initial diagnosis. And we see about 75,000 people a year at the moment with the ECHLOs we've got. In the last decade, we've been adding more ECHLOs. We're now up to about 115. And across the top 100 eye departments in the UK, we're in 80, got 20 to go. And we probably think there's about 20% of the country where we still need to, as I said earlier, find, you know, coverage. And equally, we're finding, you know, clever ways to do this for geographically challenging areas. You'll know, Alan, we've got an ECHLO who roams around the Highlands and Islands of Scotland, you know, which is a big geographical area, slightly difficult travel to get between people who can't just go to one hospital. We've got an approach in Hounslow in West London where we've got like a neighbourhood ECHLO service. There's different ways to skin a cat, but, you know, we've got ECHLOs across the vast majority of the country seeing about 75,000 people, and we say we've got about 20-25% of the country still to go to sort of finish the job, which we're hoping to do in the next 2 or 3 years, realistically, probably by the end of financial year 25-26. And actually, that's given us a real bridgehead into what I mentioned earlier, which is this concept of the pathway, where we're trying to get that experience of people going through a hospital, having had an eye health diagnosis, having that much more joined up experience. I talked about this on this program many times, but we're moving much closer now to having that in place with three critical bits of work going on that will allow people to sort of wait well. It will improve the referral process and improve the linkages between the sort of clinicians and the support that's available. So, you know, we're trying to do is to make that journey work much more consistently and organically, routinely. So, you know, when you come out of that initial diagnosis, then there is a sort of pathway you're on, which is going to provide the appropriate support for you, depending on what your particular needs are. And actually, it starts even before that initial diagnosis. When you're waiting to go through that, you're getting the information and support you need to prepare yourself for that initial clinical experience. You know, we've been working on this, and we've been convening across the NHS, Royal Colleges, other charities, and being very alert to the differences in the devolved nations where, you know, eye health is managed subtly differently. So whilst there are some very common threads, there are some local differences to acknowledge and cherish. So we're very close to getting that sort of implemented through this year. I went on Monday actually to speak at the Oxford Ophthalmology Conference with Debbie Miller, one of our team who heads up our sort of customer work. And it was good to be able to talk to a room of sort of 300 clinicians in Oxford about, you know, what we bring and what we can do. And, you know, the great was, you know, our privilege to be invited, but it was very instructive, I think, to see, you know, a room full of people coming at the pathway from a sort of clinical perspective. And what we bring is that slightly more rounded ability to support patients and understand the need for that support that sits in a wrapper around that initial clinical appointment.
Let's move away from health now. Another big story very recently as well. For rail commuters in England, consultation at the moment around closures of staffed ticket offices. Again, you're blind and partially sighted commuters will be feeling, you know, here's another obstacle to independent travel.
Yeah, I mean, we are massively opposed to this. And whether it's a big station or a small station, you know, the proposal is you take away that sort of man ticket office, you rely on automated machines, and the staff who would have been in the ticket office redeployed out and about mobile, helping customers, out in the ticket office or out on the concourse or on the platform or whatever. I mean, we're very much opposed to this for a number of reasons. First of all, we know from our insight that blind and partially sighted people are very anxious about travelling around on public transport anyway, inaccessible, difficult physical locations, communication that's not accessible. A lot is visual on train and bus stop notice boards, for example. So actually working out, where your train's going from, which platform, what time, has it been delayed, how many carriages are there, all this sort of stuff, is very inaccessible. So it's a very daunting process, and our survey shows only a minority of blind and partially sighted people feel confident moving around public transport, which, okay, you're missing a journey, but why are you taking that journey in the first place? You're taking it to go to work, to see friends, to indulge a hobby, to have a rounded life. And so anything that undermines your ability to get around has a much broader application than merely missing the journey, in itself. And so to take away ticket offices, take away that sort of sanctuary, that obvious place to go to for help, that's a fixed location, a known location, you can be certain of sort of finding someone who can help you, is really critical. And what do you go to that place for? Well, because you might have a particular needs through disability that requires some assistance. It might be that you have a particular fare that you want to try and buy because you have a disability rail card or whatever that might be. There is a nuance that you need to engage with a person that you can't necessarily engage with a machine. And then when you get to the machine, well, as we know, machines aren't desperately accessible. Touch surfaces, no dimples, difficult to navigate your way around, no audio connection, often broken. So we have been working very hard ourselves to be opposing this, to be going back to ministers, all the rail companies sort of involved, passenger groups, and working with other charities as well as ourselves, encouraging people to fill in a petition. And we should, Alan, provide a link to that so listeners can go and make their views known. There's a ridiculously small consultation window of 21 days as well versus the usual 12 weeks. So this is designed to be steered through quickly without giving people the time to oppose it. But I'm heartened actually by how quickly a whole spectrum of organisations, charities, passenger groups have come up in arms against this. And I'm hoping that we will be able to be part of that movement, which is so, so obvious that this decision is sort of rethought, at least for some of the stations where they're going to take it away. But as I say, whether it's King's Cross or whether it's my local station in Oldfield Park in Bath, which is sort of two platforms and three trains a day, if you're a blind and partially sighted passenger, it doesn't matter which station you're at, you want the service. And if it's taken away, you're going to be left much more abandoned to your fates on the railway network, and that can't be a good thing.
We'll, of course, give the contact details for you a little bit later. Matt, let's take one more story then before we wrap things up for this week. And some more good news on the helpline, in fact, around support for blind and partially sighted refugees and asylum seekers.
Clearly, a lot of people coming to the UK at the moment, and people need assistance. There will be visually impaired people within refugee numbers and asylum seekers. We've known that from working with people from Afghanistan, people from Ukraine. And so what I'm delighted we've been able to do as the RNIB, working in conjunction with our partners in the sort of VI sector, is to provide interpretation service through our helpline. So your listeners, I'm sure now, will know our helpline number, 0303 123 9999. But what we're now sort of advertising and showing is for refugees or asylum seekers or people that work with them, maybe councils or other agencies who are helping. If they need help, they can ring that helpline and they will find an interpretation service sort of on hand when needed to help with any queries for those people who need it. So I'm really pleased that we've been working on that with our partners in the VI sector, and we're using our helpline as the RNIB, which is a big one in the sector, to provide that service. So I think, good to end on a sort of good news story this week.
Absolutely. And just a reminder of the contact details if you want more information on the topics we've been discussing or to find out about any of the other services from RNIB, then do have a look at the website. It's rnib.org.uk. The helpline, of course, is 0303 123 9999. And if you have an Amazon Echo device, you can just ask Lady A to call RNIB's helpline as well. Out of time once again, Matt. We'll catch up again next week, but thank you for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Now, Alan, my pleasure. Quite an interesting set of things to discuss this week, but a lot of substance in there, so good to talk to you. Thank you.